Desert Island Discs.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? On our desert island this week is a young writer, satirist, and cabaret artist who's made a sensational rise to fame in a very short time indeed. It's the head man of That Was the Week That Was, David Frost. And David, after the send-up you did of me in this program a few weeks ago, this invitation to be a castaway comes under the heading of Coals of Fire.
Well, it's not at all painful yet,
anyway. Well, now, we've dumped you on this island. What's the one thing you'd be happiest to have got away from?
Punctuality, I think, actually. It always terrifies me, and I was almost late for this, wasn't
I? Is music a big thing in your life?
You know, I played on the linoleum when I was only three, which was quite good. And now, at the moment, I play the gramophone extremely well. But nothing else, really.
Did you have any plan in choosing these eight records that could be the only ones you'll ever hear again?
That's very moving indeed. Well, no, not really, except that I wanted to take memories on disc, rather, or platters, or waxings, as I adore to hear the disc jockeys call them. Memories rather than actual great bits of music, in fact.
What's the first one?
Well, the first one's an early memory. It's of Sunday schools, because Father's a Methodist minister, and of Methodist churches years ago, quite apart from the present, really. I used to go regularly to Sunday school, and I used to enjoy it very much, except when missionaries came, because they always talked about leprosy. I don't know why, but always. And I got terrified, so I associated missionaries and leprosy, and I used to go home and look frantically for the white spots deadly appearing all over. But otherwise, it was marvellous. I like the memory of him singing then, quite apart from him singing now. And I'd like the old Rugged Cross.
Rugged Cross, an Australian recording by the Ballarat City Choir. What's your second choice?
Well, my second choice is going to take me back to the years a little after the leprosy visits. It's going to take me back, in fact, to going to the pictures, which I did at the same time, actually. Because going to the Odeons and Gaumonts, which are now no doubt bingo halls, was a very great part of my youth, of going and getting the cashew nuts and the butter-kissed rolls or something like that, finding an elderly woman to take me in if it was an A film, and desperately smoking a cigarette to see if I could get into an X. They were great days, and I'd like a bit of film music, and I think I'll take it from a more recent film, but to me a very perfect, exciting visual one, the film Shoot the Pianist.
Theme from the soundtrack of the French film Shoot the Pianist. David, in what part of the country were you born?
I was born in Tenterden in Kent. It's a delicious little town to which, whenever I return, people say, "Oh my, how you've grown."
And you have.
Oh, thank you.
What was it your first ambition to be?
Oh, undoubtedly a train driver. At the age of five, I was sure of it, and I knew all the engines.
Yes.
By seven, it had changed, actually, to being a professional footballer with Newcastle United. I think I liked the striped shirts, actually.
Mm-hmm. At school, what subjects were you good at?
Well, things went fairly merrily in several. I was very lucky, actually, because one of the things that I was good at was maths. And that meant that at a point where you have to choose between doing the arts and the sciences, and when in fact one's no idea what one wants to do, I was in danger of choosing the sciences, which would have been awful. And really, the only reason I chose the arts was that I couldn't do physics problems. All those terrible things about tins with oxygen in and how much they weigh when it's taken out and lead filings, awful. Yes. So I chose the arts.
I know you won a scholarship to Cambridge. Before you went up to Cambridge, you did work for a year.
Yes, I had a free year owing to the hiatus over national service and so on, one of the many Ministry of Defence hiatee. And so I had the free year in which I taught in a secondary modern school, which was co-ed, and I was in charge of all the history and the games. And it was a very exciting year, and I could have gone into rep, but I did this because I knew it was going to be so different to what I was going to do later. Mm-hmm. It was a marvellous year.
I believe there was some alternative employment offered that would have fulfilled that childhood ambition. You could have been a professional footballer.
Yes, I was offered terms as a professional footballer before I went to Cambridge, in fact.
Yes.
There'd been a thing in the paper when I'd got 8 goals about hot frost strikes again, which was some sub-editor's dream. And I was offered terms by Nottingham Forest. Not, alas, Newcastle United. Nottingham Forest got very boring shirts, but they offered me.
What did you read at Cambridge?
English, sporadically. Mm-hmm. But, alas, all too little, really, because there was Footlights, which was Revue and Cabaret, and there was Granta, the magazine, which I edited.
Yes, and I believe you got one issue banned. Was this anything to do with politics? Were you already politically conscious?
Well, was I conscious? That's a great question. No, the issue, the trouble was over not so much politics, actually, as expletives. Justifiable expletives, it must be said, but there was a great row with the printers, and in the end we had to use a 3-letter word instead of a 4-letter word.
I see, yes. Cutting it down a bit.
Yes, that's right. Never extreme, you see.
And Footlights, the review club of Cambridge, you were doing what?
Well, sort of running it and doing Revue and Cabaret, one Revue a year, and lots of cabarets as well, all over the place.
So nevertheless, despite all these extracurricular activities, you did get a degree.
I was very grateful that they decided that I was worthy of one. I wasn't, but I did.
Let's have record number 3 now.
Well, record number 3 really takes me back to these days, the days of cabarets and all this. It's a piece that's been recorded since by Alan Bennett, who is originally an Oxford man, in fact, which shows how unbiased we all are. And it's that marvellous parody of his of all reminiscences of the last war, particularly of the early days of the war.
England lay like a green carpet below us, and the war seemed worlds away. I could see Tunbridge Wells and the sun glinting on the river. And I remembered that last weekend I'd spent there with Celia, that summer of 39, and her playing the piano in the cool of the evening. Suddenly, Jerry was coming at me out of a bank of cloud. I let him have it, and I think I must have got him in the wing, because he spiraled past me out of control. As he did so, I'll always remember this, I caught a glimpse of his face. And you know, he smiled. Funny thing, war.
Alan Bennett, in an excerpt from Beyond the Fringe.
And rather marvellous for another reason, quite apart from the parody, actually, because it's also a memory of exactly what I was told about the war and vaguely recall of it.
Yes.
Super.
Well, you're down from Cambridge. What was the first move?
Well, I decided that of the various things I'd done at Cambridge, sort of the writing bit and the performing bit and the television bit, that I wanted to do television by day and the others by night, as it were.
Yeah.
Not that you could do cabaret very well by day, except on workers' playtime. And so, in fact, I went to Associated Rediffusion, London's television Monday to Friday.
Yes. What
and,
did you do there?
There I wrote and appeared in various programmes, all for the best part of a year.
Mm-hmm.
Quite a variety, from Current Affairs to The Twist and back.
Yes.
If indeed they're not one and the same thing. And at the end of the year was when TW started forming, which was last August, because I'd been doing writing and cabaret during the year and met Ned Sherrin, who produces TW.
Yes. Whose idea was TW? That was
well, it sprang out of Tonight, really, and Donald Bavistock and Ned were working on it for some time, and then I got embroiled. And for the last 3 or 4 months of preparing, we worked together. You know?
Yes. The intention was what? A minority, late-night sort of programme?
I don't know, really. I think just to be as free late on a Saturday night on television as people are in conversation, and to be funny about important things rather than mother-in-law's frying pans on the head or something.
And the audience has crept up to 11 and a half million now, and you're keeping the children up.
So we hear, yes, although they're not our responsibility at that late at night. It's completely the parents.
How do the mechanics work, David? To keep it topical, do you rehearse new material as it comes in through the week?
Well, Thursday and Friday, people rehearse sketches, though I don't usually on those 2 days because I'm still sort of writing or editing with Ned or something like that.
How much do you write yourself?
Probably sort of 7 or 8 minutes a week, and then obviously a lot of ad-libs as well, which aren't written. You know,
right.
Well, obviously, they come out on the air. So. Mm.
Must be a mass of material that gets sent in every week.
Yes, we're now getting a delicious shoal of about 500 scripts a week from outside, you know, which somebody or other reads. You know. I try and read as many as I can. And
which items have caused the most controversy? There was The Consumer's Guide to Religion. There was a bit of a fuss about that.
Yes, and indeed the fuss involved father in that, of course, because suddenly people realised that the man who did this item's father was a Methodist minister. And so he got all the press on him down in Suffolk. And of course they did as London press do and Suffolk press don't, and feed questions about, don't you think it was the most blasphemous, disgraceful and disgusting thing, you know, and all this sort of thing. Yeah. And father, of course, took it all and said yes and no to it. So as a result, he came out saying entirely different things in all the papers. He came out in one saying he thought it was clever, in a second he thought it was a bit risky, and in a third that he dozed off halfway through.
Let's have record number four now.
Well, record number four must be, if we're on memories, I think we must have memories of Millie Martin, our bundle of earthy sexuality, as we always tell the press, of Roy Kinnear, of David Kern, and everybody else. So I must take a bit of that programme on a Saturday night. What's it called?
The late one with the rising audience.
The terrible thing.
The strikes will get better or else they get worse. The Chancellor will open or close up your purse. There'll be cricket in winter and football in spring. And we shall smile bravely and not win a thing. There's trouble in Katanga and trouble in Laos. But God is in his heaven, not in the White House.
I think Harold's sincere, don't you?
Oh, there's no doubt of it.
And you've only got to look at Joe to see that he's sincere.
Utterly. For that matter, there's no questioning that Jack Kennedy's sincere.
Yeah, yeah, come to that, so is Khrushchev. Give him his due, whatever else he may be, he is sincere.
True, true, true. Thank God there aren't any Machiavellis in world politics today.
You knew where you were with Machiavelli.
That was the week that was. It's over, let it be. Just let the world swing by. If that's all right with you, then it's all right with me.
An excerpt from that television program. It's coming off for the summer in a minute now.
Yes, but we're zooming back in September.
Good. How has this big and sudden success, what's the big difference it's made to your life?
I suppose just, you know, how little spare time one has, really. Because unlike a sort of first night that goes pretty merrily, with this, of course, you can't look back on it afterwards, because no sooner than one show is over at 11:43 and we're laying into a steak or something afterwards, and one's thinking about the next, you know, there's just no time.
Really. Yes, but you're still doing cabaret as well.
Oh, yes, sort of de temps en temps, every few weeks for a few weeks, because I like it.
Really. And you've already made your first film.
Yes, indeed. I don't know now, actually, looking back on those hectic weeks 2 or 3 weeks ago, how I managed to fit it in with the other. But I think I did, yes.
Is acting part of your plan?
Well, films, certainly, because films excite me. And well, films like Shoot the Pianist, certainly. And one wants to get involved.
Yeah. Now, what's for the future? You're doing a summer season.
Yes, that's a sort of missionary venture, because I want to go out to the West Country and do it. Because I always used to go and see summer shows at Yarmouth, because the Frostian homestead, as it were, is in fact in Beccles in Suffolk. Mm. One used to go over to Yarmouth for evenings and have the candy floss and the nuts and all that, and go to summer shows, which infuriated one, because one thought they could be so much better and the people, in fact, wanted more than they were getting.
Yes.
We allege we're going to give it to them.
Good. Have you any one big ambition that's still outstanding?
Well, I think I've achieved it, really, you know, to be on Desert Island Disc.
My dear David, what a nice speech. So everything's finished now. You've achieved it all.
Well, really, I think, yes. There's always any questions, isn't
there? Of course. Well, let's have record number five.
Difficult here, because it'd be much easier if there's 16 records, actually, but there's only 8. And I like and admire Oscar Peterson and Frank Sinatra, so I've got to get them both together. And we can do that by taking Oscar Peterson's LP, A Jazz Portrait of Frank Sinatra, and Oscar Peterson playing one of Sinatra's greatest hits.
The Oscar Peterson Trio, Just in Time, which brings us to number six.
Number six, I think, I want as a sort of portrait of the world in which we seem to move a fair bit of the time. It's a record by Helen Shapiro of St. Louis Blues, backed by the Nari Paramore Orchestra. Seems to me to sum up the showbiz part, anyway, of the world we move in. Not suggesting that's all of it, though, thank goodness. It's W.C. Handy's St. Louis Blues, which is marvellous. It's Helen Shapiro, who I think is splendid and has enormous potential, or certainly had enormous potential, but has her exploitation, you know, ruined it. And it has a backing by Nari Paramore and his orchestra, which seems to me to be all I loathe about the commercial touch.
Shapiro. How good a castaway do you think you'll be on this island, David? Can you look after yourself?
Abysmal.
No good at building huts and shelters?
No, I should have to live in the open air.
What about food? Have you ever learned to poach or anything useful like that?
Eggs or a pheasant?
Both.
Neither. I'm very good at sort of taking the small blue packets of salt out of a packet of potato crisps and sprinkling the salt into the potato crisp and getting it equal all over. But that's about the limit, I think.
You think this comes under cooking or horticulture? Or...
I'm not sure. It depends whether the island actually grows potato crisps. I mean.
Could you build some kind of a craft?
I'd have a go, I think, at a raft, probably, you know, after a time, to get out to that coral reef where all the riches lie.
Would you use it to escape?
No, because I look at lots of cartoons, and on cartoons, what always happens to people on desert islands is that a very beautiful woman walks up out of the sea.
I hope you're right.
After a week or two, you know, and I have to make some remark about it. And sometimes she's a mermaid, too. Mm-hmm. But I'm very optimistic about it.
Yes, good. Well, so am I. Let's have record number seven, now.
Well, number seven, there's no reason for this one except, well, I think it's marvellous. I think Joni Summers is marvellous, and I think this has got great sex appeal.
You're not so fine. I feel my lover is a swine. I have eyes for you to give you dirty looks. I have words that do not come from children's books. There's a trick with a knife.
Joni Summers. She's new to me, and I think she's marvellous, too. Everything I've got. Now, last record, David.
Well, this one is the most memory of all, really. It's Edith Piaf singing Non Je Ne Regrette Rien, simply because of the couple of times it's been our tune.
Edith Piaf singing Non Je Ne Regrette Rien. Now, you've let us hear your eight records. If you could only take one, which would it be?
I think, in fact, the last one, because of the most recent memories of it.
Right. And one luxury you're allowed to take with you.
Oh, dear. I think I'd like a direct landline to the BBC gramophone library, if that's all right, so that they can do that thing they always do at the radio show of finding a record for me in 30 seconds.
Yes, no, I'm not sure that is all right, because it means you're getting an unlimited supply of records.
And it destroys the whole basis.
Well,
every,
yes. No, oh, well, we wouldn't have a programme if anybody could do that.
No, in that case,
something else.
Mm-hmm. It'll have to be a vat of those potato crisps, I think.
All right, and lots of packets of salt.
That I can pour over them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And one book to take with you apart from the Bible and Shakespeare.
I think that would have to be Chaucer, actually, because people are always telling me that he is marvellous and tolerant and humorous and perceptive and brilliant, and I've never seen it yet. And I think I'd have time to find out, one way or the other.
Good luck. And thank you, David Frost, for letting us hear your choice of Desert Island Disc.
Not at all. I like it here.
Goodbye, everyone.